Well, good morning to each one this morning. I am happy to be here with you again. I'm glad I get to be. I think I say this a lot, but I mean it. You know, it's a blessing to see your earnest faces and hearts. God bless you. I want to have that heart, Brother Abner. I know I have some of it, but I'm not pure yet all the time, but I have some of it that I want to see your tower grow. And it's okay if you pass me up. I think that's what I think. But the old flesh comes in sometimes, doesn't it? God help us and give us of that divine nature. A question was not answered well in someone's mind, and it was asked to me again, and one of you sisters asked it again, but a couple of the brothers had mentioned they think I should say some more about it. And the question was something about, is there something specific, I think it might have even been directed to me, in your life that helped you get an eternal perspective or something like that. One thing was kind of the concept, and that one thing is hard to boil all things down to one thing. But I do know for myself, and I'm sure many of you could have different answers, for myself, there was a time when somehow my whole world and concept began to realize it needs to center around one thing, and that's Him. It was immature. It was unknowledgeable. I'm sure lots of things wrong. But I began to realize, well, the little phrase, only one life will soon be passed. Only what's done for Christ will last, stuck out to me. And I began to grow and ask God, God, would you make that a reality to me? That as I go through life, I realize only one thing really matters. And I like the picture, and I'm jumping into a little bit of what I will probably say later, but I like the picture of the solar system. The center of the solar system is what? The sun. And all of the planets orbit around it. And so the question is, what is your sun? What does your life orbit around? What is the thing that is kind of central theme, motivating power in your life? And I know the illustration is given, but it's good, so forgive me. What gets you excited is one of the best ways, one of the ways to find out what you're centered around, what you really like in life. What really gets you excited? And so this topic comes up, or this conversation comes up, and you engage. What is it? And many times that's at least a portion of what you're orbiting around. That's what's exciting in life to you. And if each of us would make that sun the sun, S-O-N, and we truly, that's truly what we orbit around. That's what I get up with a burden for. That's what I go through my day with a burden for. That's what I live for. That's what I connect for. And so that's some that I would say that began to change in my heart. I remember coming home from a Bible school. I went to Pennsylvania and came back home, went up to my bedroom and got on my knees beside my desk. And I said, God, will you please make this little spot a sanctuary? I need to learn. I need to know you. I need to know your word. I want to live for you. And it began burning. There was a hunger and a thirst. And I don't know why God put that there. But asking for a hunger and a thirst, that drives men. Asking. God, give me a hunger and a thirst for righteousness. And I could use a fresh hunger in my own heart. It's down in there. It's just there's a lot to do and accomplish in life, right? So that was kind of broad, but listen to what I share today. Brother Allen gave me this today. And I'm going to actually kind of, it'll build off of yesterday a little bit. It might be, in a sense, a practical application of yesterday. But he gave me something about preparing for the future with a life of discipleship. In the light of eternity, preparing for the future in the light of eternity was yesterday. And today, preparing for the future with a life of discipleship. And I did want to say thank you for switching my slot around. I should have been this afternoon, but they stuck me in here, so I'll be leaving right after. Headed home. Thank you for that. Preparing for the future with a life of discipleship. I began processing what to share on this topic, life of discipleship. Well, what is discipleship? And what does discipleship mean? And it gets kind of broad. And yet, in some senses, it's narrow. But I think Brother Allen said something about specifically what did you do, would you encourage them to do in this preparation time as youth, preparing as in discipleship. And so I begin to think, if I could do my youth over again, what would I do? How would I make decisions to implement in my life what I would want to implement? If I could do it again, how would I try to live it, and what would be some of the principles? Preparing me for the future, and I'm going to say again, I said it yesterday, this time, this teenage and early 20 years is an amazing preparation time. Don't take it lightly. In general, you will become what you really want. You believe that? Think about it. You'll become what you really want. I remember being told that as a young person, and the comment was made, if what you want is a big truck that makes a lot of sound and can squeal its tires, you can have it. You can have that. And that's all you get. If you want to become a missionary to down in Bolivia, you can probably do that. If you want, and you put in the blank, carnal, spiritual, I think it's John D. Martin says, his father told him, we make our own problems. He said, his father told me over and over, you make your own problems. And he laughs and says, so what do you think I thought when I had a problem and I wanted to go to my dad? You made it, son. Now get yourself out of it. And there's a lot of truth in that. You not only can become what you want, you create your own problems too. And I realize there are a tremendous amount of circumstances outside of our control that are on us. I understand that. But how you respond to them makes you who you become. There are beautiful people that had easy youth and a beautiful, helpful youth. And there are godly people that way. There are also very godly people who had a very, very difficult youth. And so that's why I say you can become what you really want. And you make your own problems. And again, take that in the context. I realize there are many outside things that come at us, but how we respond to them. God says, my grace is sufficient. And he meant it when he said it. I will be with you, God says. So, in general, you'll become what you really want to become. And so in this time of preparation that we have, that I think God gives us, when you are fully an adult, really, physically, mentally, you can think, you can process, you have the muscles, in fact, probably more than us adults and all those things, and yet you usually aren't placed at your teenage years into a position of responsibility. Or authority. Yeah, sure, there are some that come upon you. But as far as a father, a husband, a church leader, a missionary, someone, usually you're not. And so you have this little gap of time. I want to encourage you to prepare for your future and your future. Remember yesterday? Prepare for your future and your future with a life of discipleship. And in light of this, if I could live my youth again, there's a message I'm going to recommend to all of you that John D. Martin, that I listened to on the way in here, that I thought, well, maybe I should have just wrote down what he said and then re-say it to you because it's excellent. And it is titled something of that nature, If I Were a Youth, something like that. Have some of you heard that? Excellent. You all should listen to it, okay? Write it down. Figure it out. Find it. Someone who can find it for you. I think Shippensburg has it posted on their website. If I Were a Youth by John D. Martin. Excellent. Anyway, I listened to that on the way here and thought, well, probably should add some things and take away some things, but I'm going to leave that. You listen to that. I'll share some thoughts. My subtitle for today is Some Practical Suggestions for a Life of Discipleship. And I think I have like 15 of them. But for a little bit of a foundation, I want us to think about this word discipleship. Open your Bible to Luke chapter 6. A couple of scriptures in light of this word discipleship. Preparing for the future with a life of discipleship. Luke chapter 40, just grab a couple of verses and look at a couple of points. Jesus says, verse 39, and he spake a parable unto them, Jesus, can the blind lead the blind? Shall they not both fall into the ditch? And we can easily picture that. If I have someone come up here and we blindfold them, and I want to take them out and outside, out through the back and go into the other building. And if I can see, I can take them even though they're blindfolded and lead them there and we won't stumble and we'll get to our destination. That's simple to understand. Throw a blindfold around me also. He's blindfolded. I'm blindfolded. We're both blind. And now tell me to do it. What's going to happen? We're going to stumble. We're going to feel. We're going to find our way. Jesus said, if the blind lead the blind, both fall into the ditch. Verse 40, the disciple is not above his master. Disciple, here's this word, disciple and master. Two words in the context of what we're thinking about today. But everyone that is perfect, everyone that is mature, everyone that has come to completion shall be as his master. And I pull out of that, the point of a disciple is to become like the one that is discipling him. Isn't it that simple? So here we are, and we're followers of Jesus. My discipleship, your discipleship, is to become as our master. That's what we're supposed to do. That's what discipleship is. Following the one who is going before us and telling us where to go. Discipleship, someone said, meant much more than just the transfer of information. I have information. I give it to you. You remember the information. It has much more than that. It referred to imitating the teacher's life, inculcating his values, and reproducing his teachings. It's taking in what he's saying. It's making it become a part of you and then living it out. Very simple. But that's discipleship. Me becoming like him. Ephesians 5 says the same thing. Ephesians 5 verse 1. I'm just going to read that again. Be ye therefore, read it here. Be ye therefore followers of God as dear children. Be a follower of God. That's what you're supposed to do. And as you, young people, take on and grab this thing with all you have to say, I want to become a disciple of Jesus Christ and I'm going to prepare for my future life by a life of discipleship now. That's what you're saying. I want to be like Jesus and being a follower of God. But I want you to think about this. When Jesus said, follow me. Excuse me. When they said yes to following Jesus. Jesus, and I didn't count them up. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, 17, 18, 19, some like 20. 20 scriptures I just put on here. We won't turn to them. You'll just listen to them. When Jesus said, follow me, when they said yes and dropped their fishing or their tax collecting or whatever they were doing, that's when they became his disciples. So in connection with following him, there's always, it's a little scary sometimes to use that word always. I think I wrote it that way. In all of these verses, I put all, so you can correct me if it's not true. In all of these verses, following Jesus also meant losing something. And so when I say yes to following him, I'm also laying down something. And I think we'll see that in these verses. So just listen to them as we ponder this concept of a disciple, a follower, an imitator. There's the idea of when we say yes to being a disciple, we must say no to something else. So, you can easily find these. You don't have to write these down, these references. Matthew 4, he saith unto them, follow me. He's walking beside the seashore, and he tells them, follow me, and I'll make you fishers of men. And when they left their nets and said yes, they put them behind them and said, I'm following you. And remember, when Peter was struggling a bit and there was turmoil, he said, I go a fishing. He went back to what he had left. And I just use that as an illustration. It doesn't mean fishing's wrong and it doesn't mean work is wrong. I'm not pointing there. But the point was, when he went back to what he left, there was something that happened that he quit being a disciple in the sense that we're talking about. Jesus said unto them, follow me and let the dead bury their dead. Follow me. And the dead, let them bury their dead. I have to say no to something else if I'm saying yes to him. I just want that concept to settle in our minds and hearts. When I say yes to being a disciple, I must say no to something else. As Jesus passed forth from thence, he saw a man named Matthew sitting at the receipt of custom, and he saith unto him, follow me. And he arose and followed him. And what did he leave? His tax collecting. Right? When he stood up and said, yes, I'll follow you, he lost something. Jesus said unto him, if thou wilt be perfect, go and sell that thou hast, give to the poor, and thou shalt have treasure in heaven, and come and follow me. Go lay something down, rich young ruler, and then follow me. Just remember that. There's a no along with the yes. And as he passed by, he saw Levi. Okay, this is in Mark, some of the same thing. The son of Alphaeus sitting at the receipt of custom. And he said, follow me. He arose and followed him. And when he had called the people unto him with his disciples also, this is Mark 8, he said, whosoever will come after me, let him deny himself and take up his cross and follow me. Do you see there's a cross with the following? There's a no with the yes. There's a difficulty with the blessing that comes along. Then Jesus, beholding him, loved him and said, and this, this is in Mark also, one thing thou lackest, go thy way, sell whatsoever thou hast, give to the poor, and thou shalt have treasure in heaven. Come, take up your cross and follow me. And he didn't want to do it. He just wanted to follow without the laying down. And in discipleship, they go together. Got it? They go together. The yes with the no. The dying with the living. The leaving with the following. After these things, he went forth, saw a publican named Levi, sitting at the receipt of custom. He said, follow me. This is the Luke one. If any man will come after me, let him deny himself, take up his cross, and follow me. I'm going to jump down over some of these. My sheep hear my voice, and I know them, and they follow me. They're leaving where they were, and they're beginning to follow me. They're going where I want them to go, not where they want to go. Simon Peter said unto him, Lord, whither goest thou? And Jesus answered him, whither I go, thou canst not follow me now, but thou shalt follow me afterwards. Peter, you follow me, and I pulled that out of context here, but you follow me. You can't go where I'm coming now, but you'll come there. There's a dying that must happen. Jesus saith unto him, if I will that he tarry till I come, what is that to thee? You follow me. You let him alone. You don't worry about those things. You follow me. there's a leaving along with the following. So I want us, as I ponder this, what does it mean to follow Jesus in your youth? I want you all to turn to Luke chapter 2. There's just a few verses that I'm sure you all have read and thought about. I'm going to read over them, and I'm going to throw in some suggested applications to some of those things that I either have done or would do or encourage you to do in following Jesus. And again, I think I had, 15 or 16 of them. And so I, in some senses, am reading between the lines maybe heavily and making some applications to these principles. If you have other thoughts, I am open to them. But if you would just get my heart, what we see in Jesus, in his youth, the few little verses we get, I think are packed. And there's something deep here. And if you want my one thing you can do to keep the eternal as conscious before you, I think we see this one thing, and I'm going to wrap it in 16 little applications for you to process. Luke chapter 2, 49 through 52. I'll jump back up. I'll paint the picture here for us a little. Verse 48, when they, Joseph and Mary, saw him, they were amazed, and his mother said unto him, Son, why hast thou dealt with us? Why hast thou thus dealt with us? Behold, thy father and I have sought thee sorrowing. So we know the picture. They had come to Jerusalem. A whole group and lots of people had come for the feast and for the day there, or the days. And now they were headed back home. And Mary and Joseph, supposing him to have been in company with the others, went a day's journey, not knowing that he wasn't there. And they realized after a day, he's gone. And he's only 12. He's not very old. And so they begin to worry, sorrow, I guess. They thought him sorrowing. They began searching, trying to find, is he here, is he there? And they went back. And so I don't know. I think about it, one day's journey, another day back, and then they found him the next day. I'm not sure, but they 3 days, it mentions 3 days, and they were sorrowing, trying to find out where he was. And he said unto them, I'm going to read over this, and then I'll come back and we'll talk about it. He said unto them, how is it that ye sought me? Wist ye not that I must be about my Father's business? There's a lot there. We'll come back to that. And they understood not the saying which he spake unto them. They didn't get it. And he went down with them, came to Nazareth, and was subject unto them. But his mother kept all these things in her heart. Is that what Jacob did one time with Joseph? He observed these things, kept all these things in her heart. And Jesus increased in wisdom and stature and in favor with God and man. Go back to the beginning. First off, we see here, he said unto them, how is it that ye sought me? Wist ye not that I must be about my Father's business? That needs to become a central theme in your life. I am about my Father's business. And that's your center. And you revolve life around that. That's what Jesus did. Here he was. Just think of it. Sent from the Father, the God of the universe, had said, go, son. And you go, and you have something to do. You have 33 years to do it. And that's it. And so Jesus was on the earth. I don't know when things, how much he began to understand. I don't understand how the divinity and humanity of Christ balanced out. I don't know where those lines were. But he knew something here. How much he knew, I'm not sure. I have a mission in life at 12 years old, and I have something to accomplish. Young people, you have a mission in life, and you have something to accomplish. Listen, as my Father hath sent me, so send I Mickey. So send I, and you put your name in there. Have you ever thought about that? You have an amazing responsibility and mission that God is putting on you. As I sent Jesus, I now send you. I must be about my Father's business. Are you going to mess around with things that aren't your father's business? What if Jesus would have gotten distracted? He couldn't, okay? I understand that. But he would have gotten distracted. I remember the story, and I think it's... I don't remember the name, so I can't give the right names to credit and everything. But it was a group in Asia, not sure where. And there began to be a hunger. I think they had heard some preaching of the word. I think maybe the missionary had died. They didn't have much, but they knew they needed the Bible in their language and they wanted truth. And so they chose out a young man and they said, "You go. You learn this other language, whatever language you need to learn, so that you can bring us and translate the Bible into our language." Some of you have heard that story. He was sent. His tribe laid their hands on him and said, "Son, go. We're supporting you. You go. You learn what you need to learn so that you can somehow get the Bible and we can all learn it." And he left. And he started studying. He began to learn. He made his way. It was hard work coming out of the jungles. But he began to get distracted. He began to kind of, his studies got pushed off to the side and he got caught up, and I don't even remember what all he got caught up in, but things that weren't about what he had been sent to do. And it was a few years, and his people back in the village were just waiting, and they were waiting, and they were waiting, and he didn't come. Finally, his father said, "I've got to go find him." His father made his way out of the jungles, and I don't know how he found him. He connected with him. And as his son, I don't remember what he was doing. Forgive me, I don't remember the details. As he saw his father coming, when he first got a glimpse of him, his heart was totally smitten. As he realized, his father was saying, "Son, you're failing. You got distracted from what I sent you to do." And his father went back to the jungle. This young man repented, truly repented. And he got about his father's business, and ultimately he went back and translated the Bible. But he got distracted. He had a mission he was supposed to accomplish, and he got distracted. I have a mission I'm supposed to accomplish. I'm a disciple of Jesus Christ. You have a mission. Brother Abner, we're just dirt that what? God had mercy on? I forget what you said. Thank you. We're just dirt. I'm not important, really. I'm just me. I'm nothing big. I'm nothing fancy. Just some dirt. But the God of the universe loves me. And he gave me a mission. And he said, "Mickey, live for that mission." If I could be a young person again, I would try my best in these few short years that you have before more responsibilities and things get dumped on you to purpose. I want to know him. I want to serve him. I want to be a disciple. I want to learn. Be a learner that is consumed and makes all of your life revolve around your father's business. That's what Jesus did. Anyway, that's my number one point. Make your father's business the central theme of your life. Do it, young people. And I'm going to go on and give a few, some more applications of some of my thoughts. But to me, that's the key. That's probably what I would answer if you say, how to keep an eternal focus. What's one thing, whatever. Make your father's business. Make the things of eternity be what you center your life around. Everything. Actions. Thoughts. Relationships. Job. Service. When I get up in the morning, when I go to bed at night, and everything in between. Is this about my father's business? Oh, I think if we could just see it and step zoom out from little planet Earth and zoom out. We understand that term? Zoom out and go out and out so we see the big picture. And even zoom out from 2023. We're already in 2023. And let 2023 become a small little, and this, I didn't share this illustration yesterday. I guess I'll just put it up here real quick. If I was to make a timeline of eternity, this is a timeline of eternity. Timelines usually have a little line of something that starts and another little line of something that stops. But if you have a timeline of eternity, it's just going to go and go and go, right? We go all the way to Vermont, and we're going to travel there this afternoon, Lord willing, and all the way around the world and wrap it around 10 times, and we can't put a line there because it's eternity. And if we go this way in eternity, it's an incomprehensible thought. You all have heard illustrations. There's a bird that there's a granite stone, a mile wide, a mile high, and a mile deep. And a bird comes every million years to sharpen his beak a couple of times on the stone and flies away. In a million years, a bird comes again. And whenever the stone is all wore out, then eternity would just have begun. Mind-boggling, right? You've heard illustrations like that. I think it's good for us to try to comprehend that just a little bit. Just think of that little bird and how long it'll take to wear out that granite coming every million years to sharpen his soft little beak. So those little illustrations are just to make us think. That's eternity. And in between these two little lines, I'm going to call time. God created the world here. The end of the world is here. The trumpet sounds right here. And right here, He said, let there be light. And right in between, there's time. And how much time does 2023 take up in that? That's what I mean by zoom out. You get it? Are you important? Not really. You know what I'm saying? Is that important? If I'd pull one of my hairs out and lay it in here, it'd probably be too wide for 2023 for that little illustration. But am I important? Are you important in the sense that God loves us and He's given us a job to do? That's important. And you and I want to get distracted with the things of this life? Come on. Does it make sense? From God's perspective? Young people, in this time of your youth, be a disciple of Jesus Christ that is centered around your Father's business. That's what Jesus did. Mary, Joseph, don't you know I need to be about my Father's business? That's what I'm supposed to be doing. No, they didn't quite get it. But Mary pondered these things and tucked them away. Number two, in light of this, I'm going to tell you, in light of being about your Father's business, I mentioned this yesterday as we were sitting up here, continually ask God to fill you with His Spirit and change you. I think there's power in the New Testament, the changing power of this New Testament dispensation that we don't use to the extent that is available. I gave the silly little illustration of my car, right? And how I got changed. That might seem silly and little, but this kind of thing changes it, right? We can be changed. I understand what it's like to... Maybe the ultimate is, was mentioned, oh yes, have an hour of prayer time. And so if you're a spiritual giant, you should just love to have an hour of prayer time. And this would just be the most wonderful thing. And for many of you, to take an hour to just pray would probably feel like something that would be kind of big. And maybe you might struggle with, how can I fill an hour? And how can I this? And so thus the ultimate in your mind might be, I need to be spiritual and to be a disciple. I need to learn. Yeah, do that. But do you know what? As you're doing it, ask God to change you and make you to love it and enjoy it. And there are times when you won't. Back to the holy plodding thing. I think I've referred to it, haven't I? When you don't, that's okay. Keep plodding. But ask God to change you. If you know one thing about your Father's business feels like a cost in following Jesus, you're laying something down, ask Him to change your heart. And after you ask Him, keep asking. And after you're done asking again, what are you going to do? Ask again. And after you're done with that, what are you going to do? Ask again. Remember the persistent widow who just wouldn't let this judge go? Ask God to change you. Yes, you may need to make decisions, and there's a hard decision, and so you have to make a hard decision and say, I'm going to choose what's right instead of what I feel like. But as you choose what's right, ask God to change you and make you love this. Some crosses in life are never nice. Jesus didn't look at His cross and enjoy the dying. But what happened was the joy that was set before him made him say, yes, Father. So the crosses don't always become enjoyable. Dying doesn't always become delicious. But if we ask God to change us, it can, at least, at the very least, the joy that can be set before us will be revolutionizing our concept. And then it won't be so hard to say, as you shared, Abner, this morning, what do you want to say into my life to your father or to your mother or to your... And you just open up. It might hurt, but when your heart has been revolutionized, you want what they have to say, even if it hurts. Anyway, the change, number two, ask God, continually ask God to fill you and change you by His Spirit. I think that's a bigger thing than we use. It'll take dying. It'll take commitment. It'll take sacrifice. It'll take persistence. But I think there's a power in the New Testament dispensation that wasn't in the old to revolutionize us in a way that we don't use enough of it. Ask God to change you and make you to love being about His Father's business. Jesus sitting here, number three, He was in the midst of His masters and teachers asking and answering questions. So number three, pursue relationships with godly people. If I were young again, or in my youth, I'm still young. I'm not trying to paint the picture I'm old. I'm just saying in my youth. If I had that youth slot again, I would pursue relationships with people who are going to influence me the right way. What was Jesus doing? He was sitting in the temple, listening and asking questions, surrounded by the ultimate of the students of the law of God. Even though He was God, even though He was the Son, God incarnate, He still had to take His mind and fill it and put effort into filling it. He still wanted to saturate Himself with the godliest people, the most earnest law students, lawyers, some of them were called, that there were. And remember, I still remember Brother Abner's Pharisee heresy. The Pharisees, Jesus didn't condemn them for what they did. He condemned them for their wrong hearts, their wrong motives. But He actually said, do as they do. So here was Jesus, studying the law, saturated by godly people. Push in. When you see someone that you respect, even if he's busy, push in respectfully and give him a call anyway and ask, can I sit down and talk? And ask young men, maybe, will you come out for breakfast? And we want, and I'd like to talk. And begin to surround yourself with examples like Jesus did. Asking questions, discussing things, and letting other godly people influence you. You can also do it in books. And young men, some of you don't just love to read, but there's a lot of good influence that you can find in other men's writings. If I could sit down with some of the men in history, we talk about it, won't it be fun? Maybe in glory we'll get to sit down with Moses and say, Moses, and ask him questions. And we'll say, Joseph, how was it when you... And we'll ask questions. Do you know what? Here we can. We can sit down with them, saturate ourselves with them, their life, what they think in the Word of God, and learn from them. You can also do that in books. And there are some good, excellent books. Go to some of your parents or your leaders if you want a suggestion and ask them, give me a couple of suggestions. I'm going to saturate myself with the example of a godly man or a godly woman. And if you saturate yourself too long, and all of a sudden you realize, well, all of my friends, they're getting up at 5 o'clock and spending some time with God. You'll be influenced too also. Amen. We're not as spiritual as we think we are all by ourselves. We are mostly, and I think I'm getting ahead of myself, a product of the influence around us. Make and choose carefully the influence around yourself. Sit down with those you want to be like. Ask them questions. Talk to them. Build a relationship. If I were young, a youth again, that's something I would do. Push in. I mentioned books. There are messages also. There are some men I know much more about them than they know about me because I've listened to things they've taught for hours. And that's okay. They don't have time to sit and talk to me that long. But they have talked and I can listen to them. Don't underestimate the value of surrounding yourself with godly influences like Jesus did, even through messages, through some good, solid books. And by all means, we'll get to the Word of God by all means, but that's number two. That was number three. I'm sorry. Pursue relationships with godly examples. Show me who your friends are, and I'll show you who either you are or will become. And that's exciting. It's a way to purposefully be a disciple of Jesus Christ. And we see that in Jesus' life as he sat with the elders. Number four, become a student of people. Become a student of people. Here's Jesus sitting in the temple and he has people all around him. And I think even as he left, he also probably was a student of people, but he was learning from men. Yes, he was learning of God, but one of the greatest ways we learn of God is as he works through other men. Become a student of people. You young men, do you know how much you can learn on a brother's meeting evening? Most of you may not say a whole lot, and that's okay. Maybe you do say some, but you probably aren't the biggest speakers. I like brothers' meetings. Watch people and learn from them. You'll see the way they respond. Listen to the way they answer. Do it with grace, not criticalness. But do it with grace and say, what can I learn from this brother? And you watch and you realize something is said and someone else says something. What happened? And how did they say it? What's the atmosphere? How did they communicate? Be a student of people. And you'll soon realize that brother, there's humility when he talks. That brother, again, grace and love. Seems like he kind of, whenever you talk about this issue, he gets a little bit of an itch under his seat. And this, learn people. Get yourself out of the way. That's key, right? If our self hops in there and we start pushing things around and having feelings here and there, that's what becomes a mess. But watch people and learn from them. You're sitting around on a Sunday afternoon and people are talking. The ones that you know there's a lot to learn from, watch them. Young ladies, there's a lot of ladies around for you to watch. And you watch how they relate to their children, their husbands, they relate to other people. Learn from them. Even as you watch people, watch cause and effect. Young people, I know you haven't had, 80 years. Neither have I. But I've had half that. And you already see cause and effect in people. Right? And you see they make this choice, and they get this result and this result. And sometimes we think I can make the same choices and get different results. Isn't that what they call the definition of insanity? Thinking I can make the same decisions and get different results. Cause and effect works. Watch people's decisions and then where they go. Watch the results of their lives unfold. We make our own problems. Remember that? We make our own. We can be what we really want to be. Cause and effect works. Even I know at times it's shrouded in difficulties and shrouded in a lot of clouds sometimes, and you think your life is just so much harder because of these circumstances. Be faithful. You faithfully be faithful. Cause and effect does work. And if even not in this life, someday you'll see it here. Right? It still works. Even when it's shrouded by the mistakes of others, it still works. Study, and this was number four, study people. Jesus was in the midst of his masters and teachers. It's still on this concept, okay? He's surrounded by these other people as a youth. Number five, truly throw yourself and commit yourself to your brotherhood and do it. You become a part of the people that God has you in. You all know the illustration. Even when we don't agree, we're still the first one there with a shovel if the brotherhood makes the decisions. We jump in. Fully commit yourself. Don't have this itch. If you have a question about something, sure, be open, be honest. Go to your parents, go to your leaders, ask your questions, sure. Ask why this and why that, but with a humble learner's heart, not a sassy, I don't get it and don't want to heart. Fully commit yourself. You need their influence. It's not a small thing. We're not as spiritual all by ourselves as we think we are. We're the product, mostly, of the influence around us. And God is an influence, but the people around us are a huge influence on our lives. Truly commit yourself to your brothers and sisters. And I think some of you know this, but if you watch Cause and Effect, I think this is a bigger one than we realize. We all know there are multitudes of people sliding and moving and changing and going in a way that just doesn't become more like Jesus. And many times it's because they're standing up in themselves against what authorities or their brotherhoods or their authorities, that catches it, I guess, are saying. Commit yourself and do it. Brother Abner mentioned it. Go, and maybe it had been good if Joseph would have just went and talked with just his father. Just put yourself under. You won't regret it. What did Jesus do here? You know, he came to Nazareth and was subject unto them. Can you? I don't hardly understand that. Here's the God of the universe in the form of Jesus. And he submits himself to fallible humankind and says, I'll do what you say, Father Joseph. I'll do what you say, Mother Mary. And he submitted himself. Submit yourself to your... I guess we're moving into number six. He was subject unto his parents. Number six, though, I'm going to make it practical. Ask your parent / leader to speak into your life and give you something to work on or grow in. Do that. And don't just do it once. Do it on a consistent basis. And I don't know what to say. Every month, every couple months, sit down with an honest heart and say, I want to be subject unto you. Young people, there's a hidden spiritual blessing that's beyond what I think I understand and probably you understand. When a young person comes, puts themselves under and says, help me, teach me. You will become what you are. Remember? And if you want to be a workable, submitted, humble, under authority adult, under God's authority, under other people's authority, working together in a wonderful way, start now. If I were young again and I could make the decisions now, I'd shove myself under. Do it. You'll never, ever regret it. Your humans are fallible. Your parents, your authorities are fallible. But you know what? It wouldn't surprise me if some of them are more spiritual than Joseph and Mary were. Maybe some of them are, sure. But some of them are. Put yourself under and realize the blessing of that place that God is giving you and shove yourself under. You will become who you are now. Sit down and ask them. You see my life. You know me. Give me something you think would be good if would change in my life. Something you think would be good if I would grow in. What can I work on? And they might hem-haw around and not have anything. And give them time and say, well, can I ask you tomorrow? You think about it. They probably have something. They probably do. In fact, they do. Your authorities have something. They've walked ahead of you. And they can probably say, you know what? I think it'd be good for you if you would A or B or C. You go do that to them. Give them time. But you show a humble, submitted heart in them. When they give you something and you don't like it, don't go, go, yes, inside, not just outside. Jesus went as a youth
and submitted himself. Do you know why? I'm going to bring us back to this. Do you know why? He had a mission to accomplish. He had been given something to do. His Father's business. And don't forget, as my Father has sent me, Jesus said, so send I you. You have a job too. Is it important? No. But is it important? Yes. Get it? Be subject unto them. Push yourself under. Number 7, become someone known as a servant. Jesus went and was subject unto them. What's it say in Mark? It seems like in Mark 6, verse 3, it says, is this not the carpenter's son? Let me just go to that. I forget how it says that. I was just kind of intrigued again. The people around him didn't see him as anything extraordinary. They said, is not this the carpenter, the son of Mary, the brother of James and Joseph and of Judah and Simeon, and are not his sisters here with us? And they were offended at him. Jesus must have gone back to the carpenter shop and began to saw boards. And he was a servant. Yeah, that man, he's a carpenter. That's what he does. It's okay if you feel like you're just sawing boards. Saw your boards well. Jesus, I think about this sometimes. When you're working, I used to work with steel some, also with wood. I don't know where the balance is. If you have an oversensitive conscience, don't take this too far. But here I am working, and let's say I'm crafting a little cabinet, and I realize I put a little ding here. If I were making it for Jesus, what would I do? And again, if you have an oversensitive conscience, don't take this to the extreme. Jesus wouldn't want you to be all fretted and stewed about it. And yet, I know the tendency sometimes to just, we all make mistakes. And a good carpenter and a bad carpenter, the difference is how well he can cover them up. I understand that saying. It's true. And I don't mean cover them up and hide them, but work with them and make it work anyway. That's life, dealing with our oopses, mistakes, and problems. But as we're serving, it's unto Jesus. I think Jesus served well. And when he made a chair and he gave it to them and he sold it, he didn't have this feeling of, I hope they don't look underneath and see the whatever that I did. I don't think he had that. He did it well. Again, if you have an oversensitive conscience, don't take that too far. I remember as a young person wanting to serve God as I wanted to be about my Father's business. And I realized, Mickey, the church floor needs mopped when we're done. You mop it well and don't complain. And I remember mopping, Lord, I want to be a servant, and I'm mopping the floor. Oh, I had dreams of things that I thought were a lot bigger. I had dreams of serving in more amazing ways, more spiritual ways. But I needed to mop. And you will become what you are. Does that make sense? And so you mop. And I remember, and on the list goes. You're coming downstairs, and it's Bible time in the morning, and there are a couple of seats left, and one's a hard one, and one's a soft one. There's no blessing in sitting up on the top of a pole and depriving yourself while the rain, what was his name that sat on a pole up 30 feet up? And Simon who? Simon. What's that?
St. Simon.
Okay. There's not merit in that. But if you come down the steps and there's a hard chair and there's a soft chair, just take the hard one. Don't pat yourself on the back really thinking you're something. But just serve your brother, your sister, your father, your mother in that way. And quietly, without any self-imposed importance, sit on the hard one and be delighted they sit on the soft one. And when you see, Brother Abner, when you see someone else lifted up, be delighted. If someone else gets credit for something that you did, or you think you... Be quiet. And then don't simmer on the inside. I hope it comes out, the truth comes out sometime, and then I'm really a hero, because then I was quiet. All this flesh! Right? See, I know. Take that chair. You do the mopping. We have 3 jobs to do. Clean the toilet, sweep the floor, whatever. Be very willing to clean the toilets, if that's the worst job. A servant. When you go to work, you mentioned this too, Brother Abner. Be a servant at work. You be known that when the boss needs something done, you'll do it. You'll do it right away, and you'll do it well. You will become what you are. Do you get it? Maybe you want to be about the Father's business, and you want to be faithful, and whether it's serving in your own family and in your own home, and you want a home someday, some of you. Or maybe it's you want to, and there's a dream of serving God and His my Father's business in some way. Serve now, right where you're at. You will become what you are, and do it with all your heart. And put your heart and mind to work. Jesus came, was subject to His parents. Do it in your home, I mentioned. Do it in your work. Do it in the church. There's a job that needs to be done. Nobody wants to do it. I realize you can't do everything. But when you can, do it. And be known. Oh, there are people like that, and they are a delight. If I need something done, you know what? There's a particular brother I have in mind that if there's some little task I need a little help with and it will inconvenience him a little bit or whatever, if I go to him and ask him, he will be delighted to help me. He'll drop what he's doing. He'll lay aside whatever needs to, and he'll help me. And I know down in, he'll actually enjoy it. And I could, there's a dear brother in my mind right now, so I'm thinking, that's the way he is. He's a servant to the church, and the church knows it. He helps where needed. If there's a place in outreach, in ministry, look for places to do that. Look for ways to be a servant in everyday little things. Number eight, I'm going to throw in something. This little application needs to be taken in light of your setting, your authorities, all those things. So don't take this and Mickey said this or that. But if possible, look for a place in your youth before responsibility is on you to serve somewhere in complete, in simple service, continued service for a time. Whether it's you get an opportunity to go to Bolivia and they're looking for someone. If you have for a few years been this faithful servant and you offer, they'll probably send you. If you have centered your life around your Father's business and they need someone and you've been that way and you've served that way, they probably will. If you have the opportunity in your youth, take that. Whether it's Bolivia, I just threw that out. Whether it's, oh, we were talking about where, brother, last night, Ecuador. Whether it's with CAM somewhere and serve and help, whatever it is. Again, take this under authority. All this needs to be taken depending on your setting a lot. But if you have the opportunity in your youth to step out of your normal living circumstances and serve in some way, somewhere, somehow for a length of time, I'd encourage you to do it. It's good. There's things you learn. When you step outside of whether it's your own culture or language, or even if it's in your own culture and language, and yet you just serve and that's what you're doing. There's not benefit, especially you young men, there's not monetary benefit, there's not, you know, and you just serve. And you say, God, in this I want to be about my Father's business. If I were young, I would try to find an opportunity like that. But you know what? You have to have been faithful a while first. Don't go saying, hey, I want this, when you're not even faithful in the things you have. So, that's why I say all. What was that? Number eight. Number nine. Okay, we go on. Jesus here increased. Jesus, he went down and was subject unto them. In verse 52, it says, Jesus increased in wisdom. One of my applications to this is, young people, have a daily time to seek God. Do it. And don't just do your devotions. Can I do that? Can I say that? Do your devotions. Do it anyway. But look for more than just, I got my three chapters read, I prayed for my family, I did my duty, I'm going about my day. Okay, if that's what you're doing, keep doing it. But begin to ask God that you would have a time where He becomes a teacher to you through His Word. And you commune with Him. Forgive me if I've shared this with you before. There was a time when I was away for a few months from home. And I had to walk a little distance to find a little quiet corner. But I was inspired by reading, and I think it was Andrew Murray's book. It might be With Christ in the School of Prayer. I'm not sure. And he talked about my teacher.
And I got inspired by that, and I realized tomorrow morning I'm going to get up, I'm going to walk down this hallway, down these steps, around a few corners, and I'm going to find that little quiet spot where I know I am, and my teacher's going to be there wanting to teach me. And so I'm going to walk into that room. Teacher's already there. He's waiting. I realize God's everywhere, but just take the picture. And he's there and he's waiting to be my teacher. He wants me to grow in wisdom like he wanted Jesus to grow in wisdom. And so he wants to teach me. So you get up. You get up some morning and you take that concept and your alarm goes off and you realize my teacher's waiting. The God of the universe is waiting for me over there in my closet, wherever your closet is. Isn't that amazing? Some of us can't sleep the night before something exciting, right? I know. Night before my wedding. The night before I first traveled to Africa. The night before whatever it is. And I'm not a gifted sleeper. I'm a gifted stay-awaker. Anyway, we know what that is. You go to bed realizing tomorrow morning your teacher's waiting for you. And I got up that morning. And I got up with a little bit of an excitement. And I took my Bible. And I went out the door. I got dressed, did what I needed. Went out the door, walked down this hallway, and I'm thinking, in that room, my teacher's waiting. Walked down the steps around the corner, and then I put my hand on the doorknob. In there, my teacher's waiting. The God of the universe. And I open the door, and I go in. I get on my knees, and I open his textbook. Teacher, what do you have for me this morning? I think you get... There will be times when you need to just do your devotions. No feelings, no whatever, I understand. Holy plodding is godly. Patient continuance. But there will also be times when it's sweet. And it'll begin to stir you. And if you're praying for God to give you wisdom, grow in wisdom, He'll change you. You'll grow. And it'll be beautiful. Have a daily time that's not just the formal devotion time. And again, do it anyway, even when you don't feel like it. Number 10, I'm going to give you an opinion that if I were young, here's something else I would do. I would have a scheduled school time outside of my or on top of my quiet time where I would set aside some time and I would say, I'm going to spend some time, whether it's a half a day a week or whether it's a whatever it is. And I'm going to spend time getting to know God, His principles, learning from other people. I'm going to study the Word. I'm going to set up a scheduled something to help myself study the Word, spend extra time in prayer, listen to a message, read in a book. I would put aside some school time. Oops, now I closed it. Outside of or on top of my quiet time. If I were a young man especially. You young ladies, I say this, there's blessing in this. For all of us. But you young men, you're going to be a leader someday in some way, shape, or form. And every bit of good influence and teaching and solidity that you get in your life. Remember what I said, I think, yesterday? I'm still living off of sometimes some of what I got back there. I'm still making some times like that in my life, but it's not quite the same. Back then, I could have those times. Then I went out from those times and I worked. But the responsibility wasn't there. My mind could keep going in those things, all that. Now my mind is caught up in other things, doing other things, preparing for other things. And I think it's good and it's right. But that time in your youth, I would, if I were young and I was a young man, I would set aside some school time to be a student. And if you don't know what to do, ask parents, your leaders. I have a little disciple program. Some of you have probably heard of to help give some structure and guidance to someone who wants to do that. And it says study this and read this. And, you know, it just gives some monthly studies. Whatever it is, I would set aside some school time. And if you want to, some suggestions or input or want to know what that study is, you let me know. If I were young, I'd do that. Those kind of things formed me a lot. And I still stand on some of those principles to grow in wisdom. I would, number 11, purposefully direct my mind.
put forth effort. We touched on that last night. In light of eternity, these concepts of being about my Father's business, a life of discipleship, this right here, a lot begins right here. And I would put forth effort to discipline my mind and take it back. And I think I threw out the thing of setting your watch every hour, or putting a piece of paper in your pocket with a list of people to pray for, or some verses to memorize. Or I remember as one time when I felt the devil was coming at me with some terrible temptations, I was working up on a rooftop, and one of the things I decided was whenever those temptations came at me, I was going to start singing out loud. It wasn't Oh to Be Like Thee. I think it was another one. Maybe it was Oh to Be Like Thee. So here I am working away, and I realize this temptation comes at me. And I decided to do it out loud, and maybe people thought I was a little funny that day, because all Mick could do, every now and then, he'd be working away, and out he would start hearing him singing, Oh to be like Thee, blessed Redeemer. And I began to sing this temptation, and I turn the devil's thing to tear me down into something to turn me to Him. Do you know that's possible? More than a conqueror. This mind, I don't have all the fancy quotes. Probably should have put them down, but it begins here and it ends up in actions, right? And it ends up in what your life is like. And a lot starts right here. Direct it. Study the word renewed mind. That's not just some high lofty thing. Sure, it's maybe a high lofty thing, but it's a very practical thing. Renew your mind. And especially if you're dealing with some temptations of thoughts, things in your mind, you say, all right, Lord, what's my song for the day? And that day it's, Oh, to be like Thee. And if people think he's kind of stuck on a song, that's okay. Okay, change it, fine. But let it ring out as you're going through your day. Oh, to be like Thee. And people might know, oh, he must be dealing with a temptation. That's okay, you're fighting. Be about your Father's business. Some of you might be in places of work that you can't do it quite like that, but you can do something. If you are a diligent servant like this, like we had talked about, the mopping, the whatever to your boss, to your mother, to your whoever you're serving, but you disappear for just 30 seconds a few times in the day, it'll be okay if you're this kind of a servant. Know what I'm saying? It'll be okay for you, for your boss. He'll be okay if you have to run to the restroom, get on your knees and say, God, direct this mind. Just 30 seconds. If you can't sing, then you disappear. Directing, if I were young again, I would work hard at directing my mind. Number 12. My time's about up here. I would put a lot of effort into learn discipline. Dying to self, I'd put effort into that. You should know what fasting is like. And if young men, if you're working hard, or young ladies, maybe you have even a blood sugar issue or whatever, you can do what I call wimpy fasting then. We all need to do some good downright skip the food. But if you can't do that lot, you can do a lot of what I call wimpy fasting. Do you know what I mean by that? I'm just going to decide to skip maybe all desserts, all sweets, anything sugary, fruit, you know. I'll eat enough food to stay alive, but let the extras go. You do that for a week. You will be surprised. I was. I thought, we talk about, we don't eat desserts. It's amazing how many times some little chocolate comes under your nose. Or some little apples slice. Or some whatever. And you decide, this week, I'm going to fast. And it feels a little wimpy to me, so that's why I call it wimpy fast, okay? That's not a biblical term, that's a Mickey term. Do some wimpy fasting if you can't do other fasting. And as a father, I want to be with my family a lot of the time, and table's a good time, and so, but I can do this wimpy fasting, and they'll hardly know it. Let your mother know, because if she makes something special and you say, that's not very nice. So maybe you should let some people know, but do it. And you'll be surprised how many times it comes back to your mind until the end of the week. An apple or an orange or whatever's the thing you like looks really, really good. Number 13. Jesus grew. excuse me. He grew in wisdom and in stature. So in some very practical things. He died to himself. I put that under the stature. And also, choose your jobs. young men, and the things you do, young ladies, but especially you young men, choose your jobs accordingly. If it's not a good influence, quit it. There's plenty of things to do. If it's not giving you what you need to be centered around your father's business, then skip it. Is that too strong? Cut off your hand, pluck out your eye, Jesus said. Let's center around my father's business. And I realize, again, take that all in the context. Under authority, what authorities are directing. But choose those things. And he grew in favor with God. Grow and work, number 14, pursue humility. Pursue it. Abner talked about this morning in envy, and I see it sticking up its head in my life. It's awful how often Mickey wants to see himself on top, come out right. The other one was wrong. I get the little better end of the stick. It's ungodlike. Pride, one person said, is an anti-God state of mind. Work on it. Most of us humans, maybe some of you don't have the tendency like I do, but most of us do, and we want to push ourselves. You work on not pushing yourself forward, but pushing others forward. You know the little game, right? Make the game this. Right? Can you do that? And you think about that. How can I bless my brother, my sister, a sibling, my parent, and push someone else up, not myself? And pursue pleasing God and not man. In your clothes and in your cars and in your gadgets and in your use of time. And God, are you pleased with this? If I were young, I would put effort into that. It's a common youth problem to care almost more about what's around me than what he thinks. Work on that. Grow in favor with God and with man. And I'm going to say this in favor with man. Learn to communicate. And young men, I'm underscoring it for you. Frequently, they do a better job than we do. Not always. You need to learn it too. Don't just become emotional. It's not always communicating. Anyway, learn to communicate. And I don't take that negatively. My wife is more emotional than me in things, and I love her dearly, and I'm glad she's that way, so don't take that wrongly. Learn to communicate. Oh, well, I'm just a quiet one. Yeah, and that's okay. But learn to communicate. Sit down and know how to share heart things. Your feelings are somewhere. Try to figure out how to explain it so that someone else understands the way you feel. You have some thoughts, young men, or maybe for us sometimes if we don't actually know what we're thinking and it's kind of confusing. Learn to figure it out and communicate it with someone else. We as men especially must become communicators. As leaders and carriers of our Father's business and of this gospel that must be preached, we must learn how to communicate. Learn how to communicate. If I were young, I'd put effort into it. My mother used to come up into my room and help me and sit down and say, Mick, what you thinking? What are you this? What are you that? And she would pry me out. And she wouldn't let me get by with one-word answers. Yep. Nope. And she would pull me out. Mick, express yourself. Talk. Communicate. What are you thinking? What are you feeling? We must learn to communicate. If I were young, something I'd put effort into. Jesus grew in favor with God and in men, and I think that's a big key in relating with humankind. If I could live my youth again, that little, I'm still young, I'm not old, but that youth slot that most of you are in, I would seek to put my Father's business, end quote, as Jesus did, and try to make everything center around that. All of life. How does it fit into that? How does it develop that? I could say this, to build on yesterday, I want everything in the light of eternity to be what it should be. So that someday, when I stand before that great white throne and there's no more a physical barrier between me and that throne, that all that I did and all that I was, I can say, Father, I tried to center it around you and in light of the way you see things. Young people, We have a business to accomplish. Our Father's business. I'm trying. And I know many of you are trying. Let's keep going together to center our lives around our Father's business. Nothing else is half as worth anything and even as exciting. All these other excitements that tried to lure us away from our Father's business would just peter out, and it's not fulfilling. This is a fight worth fighting. Let's fight together, young people. Prepare for your future with a life of discipleship that centers around your Father's business in the light of eternity. Will you do that? Let's pray. Father, thank you. Thank you for your word. Thank you for the example of Jesus. I pray you would take these few words of mine, make them an encouragement to these dear young people, and take them on, Lord. We want to see your name lifted up. You know on my heart these past while, glory to God in the highest, and on earth peace, goodwill to men. Make us each labor for that with all of our heart, mind, soul, and life. Glory to you and men right with each other and with you. Bless these dear young people as they endeavor to prepare for their life through discipleship, through living for you in the light of eternity. Oh, bless them, Lord. Bless them. Help me, Father. Bless me. I need you and I want to be faithful. So thank you that I get others around me with that heart and that desire. Thank you. In Jesus' name we commit ourselves. Amen.